listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Ewan Murray.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show, where I'm delighted to say we're joined this week by a very special guest, a man who's won the Ryder Cup as both a player and a captain, Sam Torrance. Sam, how are you?
Very well, Rob. Thank you.
Good to have you with us. And I'm also joined by Sky Sports anchor Ewan Murray.
Delighted to be here.
Yeah, we're looking forward to a different chat this week. We'll talk majors, Ryder Cups, Tiger, and also look ahead to this week's event, the Trophy Hassan II in Morocco. That's coming up a little bit later in the show, but first of all, Sam, let's reflect. It's only been a few days, really, since Tiger's amazing win. Your thoughts on this year's Augusta?
Oh, as good as it gets, I think, Rob. He was magnificent from start to finish. I'd never lost faith in the man. I always thought he'd come back. And when he won the Tour Championship last year, and then when he was leading the Carnoustie, 12th tees, leading the Open, my God, the excitement around the world was unbelievable. And this time he saw it through. Like a master chess player the way he went around the course on the last day. It was beautiful to watch. And obviously sad for Molinari, but I was over the moon for Tiger.
And probably, Ewan, that's a good point that Sam brought up. We should trace this run back to the Open Championship last year.
And to the PGA, who's second in the PGA Championship at Belle Reve. So the foundations were already laid. When he won the Tour Championship, they were scenes I've never seen the like of as a player or as a commentator. And it didn't surprise me, to be honest, that Woods would go ahead and win the next major at Augusta. The question is, has he stopped winning them or will he continue to win them?
Well, of course, there's always talk when Tiger comes to Augusta that everything's amped up. What was the vibe like? Because you were there.
I think everyone, when they saw the position he was in, I thought the first round was very important to him. These first five holes, he's never actually been a good starter in major championships or Ryder Cups. You look at the Ryder Cup of 2006 in the middle of Smurfit's Lake, Royal St. George's down the right-hand side. We also had the US Open. He's never been a great starter, but he was level par through five on day one, and that was when the first brick of the foundations went in. In the end, a great story.
Did you ever doubt him, Sam? Getting into that last round, toe-to-toe with Molinari. A lot of people thought Molinari was going to close this out.
Well, I certainly thought he could close it out, but I was never scared of Tiger. I was desperate to watch what Tiger was going to do in the last round, how he'd handle it all. And his patience was magnificent all day, just never pushed. I almost thought in the first round, you had mentioned his start, that he played very tentatively, I thought. Just fairly green, just get round. He's won five Masters, four times he shot 70 in the first round of those five wins. So 70 was a good score for him. He enjoyed that. But no, I never doubted him.
You played the Masters. What's the course like? Why is it so special to certain people who've figured it out?
I think because we go there every year. I've been watching it since I could watch telly. I mean, since I was 8 or 9, I've watched Augusta. I could tell you every blade of grass on that golf course without ever having gone there. I could still have told you every blade of grass. And I think it's the familiarity of Augusta, the excitement of Sunday back nine or any day back nine, just Augusta, we know it so well.
But the golf course, Sam, you've played and competed on the golf course. What's it like?
Well, it's a totally different golf course than when I played it. It was actually quite an easy golf course. It wasn't difficult, easy green. And I didn't find the putting difficult. I found when you missed a green, that was the hardest part. If you missed your chip by a foot, 18 inches, you could go off the green and look rather silly. Putting was, yes, if you're on the wrong side of the hole, you'd struggle to two-putt, but you knew that. But it was when you missed the green, I found it was hard. But tee to green, it wasn't that difficult.
Do you think you and the television pictures don't really convey to people at home when someone's in a spot around one of those putting surfaces how difficult the shot they face is?
Well, the trouble is the television cameras flatten out the ground, and as you well know, it's one of the hilliest courses you could ever play. Augusta, and the slope Sam's is talking about there on the greens. It's the same as the fairways. I think one of the great tests of Augusta is very rarely do you have a flat lie. Very rarely. So it tests every department of your game. Patience, another word Sam used, so important round there. So easy to lose it because you might get three or four very difficult shots one after the other. So it's a course to plot your way around. Sometimes you don't go for flags, and those who have been there over the years know which flags not to go for, which is very important as well. But tremendously hilly golf course, as I say, tests every single stance that you could possibly have in golf.
Do you think the clinic, Sam, that Tiger put on the closing stretch there on the Sunday afternoon is an example to people like Rory McIlroy as to the discipline that you have to have around there to eventually put that green jacket on?
Tiger's got more than any other golfer's ever had, I think, in his bag. He has more shots. He has every department of the game mastered, virtually. He did lose it for a while, but it was always in there. But McIlroy, I don't know why. I thought he was going to win this year by four or five shots. His game coming in, the way he won TPC at Sawgrass, the way he played, his drive at the last. I mean, if people knew how tough that drive
was. That's one of the greatest tee shots ever hit, that one.
I've ever seen, yeah. I mean, to take it on down the left, cut it back in the middle of the fairway, that takes a world-class golf swing, and that's what McIlroy does. Maybe that one time all those years ago where he completely blew it, all went wrong for him, maybe that's still in there. Maybe it still hurts. I don't know. He has the game to win it. But Tiger doesn't play the way he used to now. It's almost every shot's kind of sawn off. You don't see him thrashing the ball every morning. I love it. We always used to say Tiger was at his best when he was playing at three-quarter pace. And then you get when you get slightly out of position, you hit it a bit harder to try and correct your position, and it looks like you make a slash at it. He doesn't do that now. I thought those drives up 17, just as soon as he hit it, the tee's picked up. He was so happy with himself. And the scenes, I could talk out for hours of this. The scenes at the end were just magnificent.
Yeah, they were just incredible.
Tiger, he's back.
You were saying it for weeks, Ewan, the look of Tiger's swing to you, even when the results weren't absolutely tip-top. His run-up to the Masters, in your view, swing-wise, he was in great shape.
Well, I'm fortunate to be in a situation where you see a lot of him, and I think he swings the club better now than he has at any time in his career. Now, a lot of people disagree with that when you go back to the turn of the century, and there's total domination, winning the US Open by 15 shots, the Masters by 12, etc. But gone are the words explosion and power that he used to use a lot. And gone are talk of coaches. You don't hear Tiger being coached by anyone anymore. It looks like he's worked it out himself. Maybe the injuries that he's had has told him that he has to start swinging the club a little slower. He is swinging it slower, but he's swinging it wider, and he's actually longer now than he was then.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, Tiger Woods with that performance. Where do you think that ranks, Sam, in his 15 majors now? I mean, it's 15 major championships.
It's got to be the best one for him, I think. The first one would be magnificent, and each and every one other is obviously going to be a great memory for him. But this one, I think, was more special than anyone he's won. This was the total silence of the doubters.
Well, you mentioned the first one and the bookends. His father at the back of the green in 1997, his mum and the next generation of Woods waiting for him as well. It's a great story. It's great for golf because everyone is talking about golf all of a sudden because of Tiger's win. I looked at Neil Warnock, the manager of Cardiff, the other day when they were playing Brighton, and he used Woods in the pre-match talk to say, look, things can be done from way down there. Now, that's unheard of in football. Football's got their own world and their own language, but Woods was mentioned in that. Everyone's talking about Tiger Woods now. Kids who only read about Tiger winning majors years ago, they're talking about him. So a fantastic week in all, and it's not his last major win, for sure.
You know some of the young bucks, Sam, that always say, I could have taken Tiger on. Do you think now they've seen a little bit of the Tiger Woods, maybe it's not such a great idea, what he must have been like in his pomp?
Yeah, all they can do is learn from the great man. Go and play with him and learn how he gets round it, how he does it. Yes, I was going to say the difference when he walks into a locker room now. It's now Tiger again. It's not this humble chap coming in that hasn't won for 10 years and, almost a lost soul out there. But now he's the man again. He is the man.
Do you think the chase for 18 majors with Jack Nicklaus is a genuine chase now again?
Oh, I always thought it was.
Really?
Absolutely.
Even when he was down and out, even when the swing was to kaput and the body was broken, you thought he could come back.
Yeah, well, he has shown us more great shots in golf in the 90s than I don't think we'll ever see the like again. So if a man's capable of doing that in his prime, and he's not out of his prime yet, he's what, 43?
43, I think,
he's 43. I hate to equate myself with a great man, but I had my best year when I was 43. And, I didn't look after myself nearly as well as he did. So he's nowhere near the end. Nowhere near. I mean, Nicklaus went, what was he, 46?
46.
46, that's 3 years. You never know, come July. he could have won another two.
What about the venues coming up for him?
Bethpage, fantastic. Ewan?
Yeah, I think he's got 5 years at the very top. That's 20 majors. He needs to win 20% of them to pass Jack Nicklaus. But The thing that's changed in the world of golf since this victory at Augusta National is Tiger knows he can now win a major. The ones who were saying that they would have loved to have played alongside
it, yeah.
They now know he can win a major. So it'll be interesting to see who kicks on. Will Dustin Johnson find his second major? Will Justin Thomas find his second major? Will Spieth win again?
That's a very good question. The Spieth question is a beauty because there was a young fella that in his very early 20s was winning major championships. Now he is really struggling. Have we seen the best of Jordan Spieth?
I'd hate to say so, but it might be.
He was remarkable.
He's flawed.
Yeah.
But his swing was flawed.
But
yeah,
still, remarkable to win
absolutely
three majors that quickly.
Absolutely. But the 30-foot putts he was hauling every single round. I mean, no disrespect to man at all. I think Spieth is an amazing chap. He's a really nice guy. But his swing was slightly flawed. I mean, they were all saying it when he was winning the majors. This is an incredible performance. Will it go on for the next 20 years? Who knows? It doesn't look like it will.
See, the Woods win is making all the other kids ask questions of themselves and about themselves, and Spieth must be one of those.
That's the big thing from the Masters victory. As I say, Woods knows he can do it, and he's got some venues you talked about coming up that he's very comfortable on. And Koepka's another one. I mean, he picks up three majors very quickly, and all of a sudden Woods is back in the picture. Will Koepka be the same? Will he have the same mindset going into these majors? Will Dustin Johnson have the same mindset? Justin Rose, Molinari, they know Woods can win again, as Woods does.
If you'd have played with Woods, I'd assume you'd have probably said that he was the best guy that you ever played with. Who was the best guy that you ever played with?
Well, I played with Jack Nicklaus, so he was my hero. But Trevino was
special.
Trevino was special. He just manoeuvred the ball like no one I'd ever seen. Nicklaus was obviously my absolute hero. He was the greatest player I ever played with. Actually, I got to play with him. I asked him if I mind if I give him a compliment. And he knew I was a wee bit of a reprobate, so he didn't know what I was going to say. So he says, go on then. I said, well, in the 400 majors that I won in my dreams, you were running up every time. And he liked that.
Did he like that?
He loved that. He loved that. But he
had 19 second places in the majors. It's not bad.
No, not bad at all. But that's another side to who's the greatest player that ever lived. Woods has won 18 WGCs.
Yeah.
The next best is Dustin Johnson with 6. Now, the WGCs, you could even say they're a better field than the majors, and certainly a couple of them. You know, he's won 18 of them.
I know, it's amazing. So what are you saying?
Put it
out there.
Well, yeah.
So you've just said, you've you've waxed on about Jack and how brilliant he is, and now all of a sudden you're saying, 18 WGCs for Tiger.
You put me right on the fence there.
Well, you put yourself there.
I did. Yeah, Tiger's probably the greatest player that ever lived.
Greatest champion.
It's hard, isn't it? It's very hard.
Well, the greatest champion, I would say, was Nicklaus. The greatest golfer I've ever seen is Woods, and there is a difference.
I agree.
What about your favourite major memory for yourself?
Oh, not for
in
me.
In my career. Absolutely.
Oh, Chris, there's no many. I played in 31 consecutive. I suppose that would be my favourite menu. I never really got close. I think St Andrews when John Daly won. That was the best I ever played. And that was the one I could have won. And I had 3 3 putts and a 4 putt on 5 holes round the turn in the last day. Finished 9th. But I really enjoyed that, the support I got that week. Walking off the first tee in St Andrews, I was a match behind Daly. And I was in front of about one of them. And I couldn't stop the tears coming off the first tee with the crowd. They were just magnificent. But it was just too much for me. I was never really good enough to win an Open, but I loved playing it. It was a great event, but it was our only major. You know, we didn't really get into the three across the pond very often.
I was going to say, back in the day, when you were one of our top players, the amount of players that went across stateside was very few, very small group of players. Would you have liked to have had your career now and played a bit more in the States?
Oh, no. No. Have you not been there, Robert?
I have been there on many occasions.
It's a fabulous place. I'm a homeboy. 1983, a week before the Ryder Cup, I lost the Southern Open to Ronnie Black. If I'd won it, I'd have had a 3 years exemption. And in the end, I was kind of glad I didn't win it because I love my life. I love my home. I love being here. I love Europe. I love Scotland. I love England. It's where I'm from. It's where I want to be. And when I go to America, when I went to America on the Champions Tour, I went to the tour school, regional, went to the final, got my card, 6 spots, 7 spots, 1,000 people. I got my card. I was never happier. And I lasted 6 months. I just couldn't take it, you know, because in Europe, every week I go home on a Sunday night. Now, all of a sudden, I'm there for 4 weeks. I'm home for a week. I'm there for 3 weeks. I'm home for a week. And the weeks you're at home, you're a nightmare. But it's also the weeks you're there that's finishing Sunday night. It doesn't start till the next Friday.
So do you think for today's young players that it's a choice? You either kit and caboodle, move the whole lot over there and try it, or you stay in Europe? The mixed position where you're flying back across the Atlantic all the time is a tough place to be.
I've said this before, Rob. The European Tour, for a European player, is where they should be playing. You have 8 Rolex events. Now, they're over $1 million first prize.
Yeah.
If you're in the top 50 or so of the world ranking, you have the World Golf Championships that Sam was talking about earlier. So there you are, you're up to 12. If you're in the top 50, you have the majors, you're up to 16. The Players' Championship is the top 100, so you'd play there. And if you put in the Desert Swing in January, which is the only place to play golf in January, why would you want to go on the west coast of America and put on bumpy Poana greens?
Yeah.
Why would you want to do that when you have perfect playing conditions, perfect practice facilities to get your year underway? Why wouldn't you stay on the European Tour? Because it's quite feasible that if you did and you played well, you'd be in the top 5 in the world ranking because of the points.
Let's move the conversation on to Ryder Cup. And our new Ryder Cup captain, Sam, is a man you know very well, Padraig Harrington.
Yeah, Padraig, he'll be a fantastic captain. He's a thinker. He's definitely a thinker. He'll think it through. He'll not leave a stone unturned. He'll be a little bit... Well, no, they're so individual, each captain. McGinley, I thought, was fantastic. Darren was great. And totally different captains. And Padraig will be his own captain. But the great thing about Padraig is he have total respect from the players. And they'll want to play for him, and that's great.
How hard is the away leg?
I think it's easier. There's less expectation. Absolutely, there's less expectation. There's less to do function-wise and set-up. You don't do any of the set-up. You've got a lot more pressure on you when you're playing at home. That's the way I felt it. I just wanted to go out there and just play well and beat them. You know, in America, the expectation was not there in my day. Now it is. Maybe it's different now. Maybe the home team is an easier match, but I always found the away match is slightly easier than the home match.
That's interesting. Whistling Straits, Ewan, as a venue for a Ryder Cup.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Up there on the cliff, right by the Great Lake. Superb place to play golf. Great match play golf course, because you can get fairly strong winds there at that time of the year. But I think it will prove to be maybe their best venue, as Paris proved to be our best.
We got 55,000 people around Paris National. What's it going to be like moving people around Whistling Straits?
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, they've had a PGA, the one that Keimer won there when Dustin Johnson got penalised.
That's right.
That, touching the
sand, non-bunker. Yeah.
For the non-bunk.
Yeah.
That everyone was standing in.
That's right.
But, yeah, great finishing hole as well. And a great closing stretch, 16 the par 5 and then into 17 and that very difficult par 4 18th. But, no, I don't think there'll be a problem getting people around. They manage in the PGA, and that's 9 years ago, believe it or not. So it shouldn't be a problem.
Is that really 9 years ago? That's unbelievable how it flies. Winning Ryder Cups, Sam, as a player or as a captain, which is better?
Well, God, their captaincy.
Very different, aren't they? They're very different things.
It's another life. The captaincy was the greatest week of my golfing life by a million miles. But I couldn't have been prouder than being on a winning team as a player. But the captaincy was my greatest week ever.
People say that in that team room, you make friendships, you get to know people a lot more than you might know them ordinarily with your time on tour. Is that true?
1,000,000%. You know, like, to take Costantino Rocco, for example. I loved Tino, known him all my life. And we were good friends. And then we played in the Ryder Cup together. And now we don't see each other, but a hug. You know, as soon as I see him, we'll go up and hug each other. That's the kind of bond you create in the Ryder Cup. You get into that inner soul. And you see exactly what I played with Tino when he had the hole-in-one. I've still got the bruises. He picked me up and gave me a bear hug.
Bear hug.
I tell you, I've still got bruises in my chest. I actually had to hit him on the back of the head. I couldn't speak
to tell him to let go.
I had to slap him on the back of the head.
Wonderful.
Do you have a picture, Sam, of the 18th green at the Belfry at home?
Just a few. Yeah, loads, yeah. From player and captain.
Now, I remember the closing was an 0-2. That 17 years on, it's Sam's day again at the Belfry, because we can still see you with the red jersey on, arms raised. Tears, of course. The tears are never too far away from Tons, as you well know.
The picture on the last
screen. That's the one, yes, that's the one. And then, of course, the euphoria of being a winning captain. And Suzanne beside you there, the family there, the smiles, and must have been a very emotional time for you.
Oh, it was extraordinary. The walk back to the clubhouse from the last green, the two of us just crying our eyes out. It was just magnificent. And I remember that getting into the room and getting into the shower and just standing in the shower. I didn't even need to turn it on. It was raining already in there.
You know your pose, that famous pose that you made on the 18th green? I'm surprised, because Seve did it, that you didn't turn that into a tattoo and have a little tattoo on your arm of yourself doing that.
I put it somewhere else. I'm not going to show you. Well, it's radio, I suppose I could.
That would be very cheeky. I'd like to see that, Sam, actually.
Oh, wrong side.
Hopefully we'll never see Thomas Bjorns.
Well, of course. That's right.
I have seen it.
Oh, yeah.
I have a picture on my phone. I can show you it now.
That's as far as we need to go on that subject.
Well, actually, it doesn't work on the podcast, but we'd like to see the picture.
It's definitely there.
Is it really?
Yes, it's there. I've seen it. It's on his left cheek.
You would remember, Sam, what it was like for Europeans before Seve kind of turned it all around.
Before Tony turned it all around.
Tony then. But Seve was
Europeans
a conduit.
Coming in 79 was magnificent. Tony Jacklin turned the Ryder Cup around for us, making it so much bigger and better. But my first one was 81 at Walton Heath. I mean, what a hammer and what. But it was just magnificent just to be there.
That team that they put out.
Yeah, well, 11 major winners, and the other one went on to win a major. But you know, they really were magnificent. But that's where they were all of my career until we actually started beating them. And then once you've beaten them once, we knew we can carry on with this. 83 it turned. 1983, we lost at West Palm Beach by a point. Canizares and Lanny Watkins on the last hole. Watkins hit a 70-yard shot, stone dead to win. And
you stiffed your shot at the last, did you not? Do I remember that? Is that right?
I did, yeah. It was Tom Kite, yeah. Finished all square. But that night we'd lost and it broke our hearts and we all swore to a man we will be back next time and we will beat them next time. That was 85 and we did.
But was Seve not part of that thing? Everyone talks about Seve having the conversation. We haven't lost. This is...
Seve was the greatest team man that we've ever had. He was magnificent. He didn't enjoy... he loved playing against the Americans, but he enjoyed beating them more than anything else in his golfing career. He just loved it.
So the build-up to 85 was at least 2 years long, at least.
Oh, yes, yes. And then it carried on to 87. To this day, I know Bedina was out of this world, but to me, the greatest victory we ever had was 87. The first time we beat them in America at Muirfield Village, the captain, the legendary Jack Nicklaus, who designed and built the course, and we hammered them from start to finish. There was partners there, Seve and Ollie. It's the first time they played together. Langer and Lyle, just unbelievable, and Woozy and Faldo. I mean, those three pairings were just extraordinary. Never seen anything like it. And to this day, I don't think we've played a better match or beaten them more convincingly in their own territory.
What's your favourite European Ryder Cup win, Ewan?
Oh, it would have to be Medina because of the involvement in it through the television. But going back to 87, I remember Darcy, Eamon Darcy's putt,
yes,
and Ben Crenshaw
right.
putting with a sandwich because he'd had an argument with his putter halfway around there. Not that it made any difference to him. He held them with the sandwich as well. But Eamon Darcy, one of the most difficult putts you could ever face, downhill, left to right. If he misses, it's going 3 or 4 feet by, in. So I remember that. I remember Ollie's dance.
His dance in the last
It's a bit like Sam with his arms raised.
Often copied but never equaled.
Absolutely. and Seve punching there at St Andrews. The moments that stay with you all the way through your lifetime.
And 84 Open, that was, wasn't it?
84
round
Open,
the
yeah.
crowd, I think that's the best celebration ever. That brings a tear to my eye every time I think of it, Seve there in 84.
I think Seve did many things that bring a tear to her eye simply because he's not here with us, and he should be. He was taken away far too young. But I remember Darcy and just one punch of the air and exhaling at the pressure he was under at that time, having seen what happened in 83, then winning in 85, now trying to win for the first time on American soil. Everything was on that putt.
And it was a horrible putt as well.
Oh, it was ugly. And he managed to knock that in. So they were pretty happy memories. And then you think of the Langer putt at Kiowa. Every time I watch that on a replay, I think this time it's going in. Mm. I don't know how it misses, but There's been so many close moments in the Ryder Cup over the last 25 years or so, and that's what's made the Ryder Cup what it is today.
Do you think, strength in depth-wise, now the Europeans are in a better position than they were back perhaps mid-'80s or even the 90s?
Oh, it's not even close. It's not even close. Our strength in depth is our strength now. The quality of play. When in the 70s and 80s, the top six were as good as their top six easily. But the bottom six struggled, and I was always one of that bottom six, and I knew they were better than me, but it didn't really matter. That's what it was. But now we're equally, if not stronger, than the Americans.
What advice would you give Padraig Harrington going into his captaincy?
Trust your heart, trust your instincts. There'll be decisions you'll have to make. The hard ones are the Friday, Saturday, when you've got to put the pairings out in the afternoon and your team's still on the golf course. So the pairings have to be in at 12, and the matches probably won't finish till 1. So you could have an instance where a team are three up, four to play, and you put them in for the afternoon and they lose the last four holes. You know, these are tough decisions to make.
How important, Ewan, do you think it is that you get the blend of the vice-captains right?
I think that's been proved down the years as well. Going back to Sam's year in 02, he had people around him that he knew he could trust, and he sent them out there to get a job done and relay the information back, which made his decisions not easy, but a little easier. McGinley, I thought, was magnificent, the people he had alongside him there. And that will continue because it's been a successful formula. It will continue. And we have a lot of players around 45 and 50, some who are 40 at this moment, that will be vice-captains and one or two of them captains in the future. So it's progressing nicely. I remember sitting with George O'Grady one night, and he said, you know, I've been working out the captains, and Sergio Garcia will be captain in 2029. I mean, we were talking 25 years before Sergio might be captain in 2029, but he actually laid the captains down and said, that's how well off we are for captains, and we have plenty of them, so we have plenty of vice-captains as well. And it is important. Sam will know more than me because he knows more what they do, but there's Sam's right hand out there.
Yeah, they're imperative. They're so important, and they're so important to the team as well. The example I'll give you is, to me, the captain of the Ryder Cup is almost like your headmaster at school. He's slightly a daunting figure. And if you've got a slight problem, you're just going to swallow it. You're not going to go and tell him it. But that's where the vice-captains come in, because they're your mate. So is your, the captain's your mate as well, but he is the captain.
Right.
So he's almost exalted. You just leave him alone and he'll come to you. But you take it to the vice-captains and they'll solve it immediately. And if they can't solve it, they'll take it to the captain and he'll solve it. So problems are solved through the vice-captains. They do a fantastic job. As Ewan said, there are eyes and ears on the golf course. You can't follow four matches in the practice rounds. And it's on Friday as well. Friday morning, you need one with each match. So it's imperative.
Let's move on to other news. CT Pan secured his maiden PGA Tour title with a one-shot victory at the RBC Heritage. The Taiwanese player sealed the win following a final round of 4 under par, 67, which left him one ahead of the in-form Matt Kuchar. Matt Kuchar playing well again. He's so consistent, Ewan, it's unbelievable.
He is. I think he's lost a few fans this year, to
no
be
doubt.
Perfectly honest, with what happened down in Mayakoba. But that takes nothing away from the quality of golf that he is playing. He's had a couple of top threes. He's had a couple of wins already this year. He's right up there in the FedEx, which is very important with the way the FedEx has changed throughout the course of the last 12 months. Just three FedEx playoffs. And if you get to Eastlake and you lead the FedEx, you'll be 10 under par before you start.
You wouldn't mind that, Sam, would you? 10 under par starting ahead of the field, with a prize of $15 million waiting for you.
Oh, that'd be very nice.
You, that, you wouldn't mind nice. That. You'd go to America for that, wouldn't you?
Yes, hey? I don't know. No, not really.
Just going back to the RBC Heritage, Dustin Johnson in the final two ball, leading going into the final round. Bad last day, very unlike the world number one.
Well, he had a lovely run, didn't he? He went bogey, 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 double, double. That's going to finish anyone's chances. And I guess what it just... He's not a man that seems to tinker when he's out there. When it's going wrong, it just goes wrong. I mean, it was a month or so ago, he had a really bad first round, and someone asked him in the interview after, did he change it? And he says, no, I knew it would get right. So he just keeps going. And I guess when it's bad, it's bad.
Are you a big Dustin Johnson fan, Ewan?
Yes, I think he's very calm, which is like an extra clip on his back. You can never tell whether he's shooting in the 50s, 60s or 70s or 80s. Nothing changes. And I think in the high-pressure world of tournament golf, that's a wonderful asset.
top 10 in the Race to Dubai, please.
In 10th place,
yes.
Richard Sterney is second to Shane Lowry over there in Abu Dhabi. Winner this year, Kurt Kitayama from the United States occupies 9th. And new European Tour members Xander Schauffele and Bryson DeChambeau occupy 8 and 7, respectively. Just outside of the top 5 is the Open champion Francesco Molinari. Luke Oosthuizen in 5th place, he's had a fine start to the season. And Ian Poulter played in all 3 legs of the Desert Swing at the start of the year. Played well in them, acquired plenty of points, and he's in 4th place. Surprise of the year is Justin Harding. Very interesting lad from South Africa who took the wrong road after a very bright career as a junior. He went all the way back, found the right road with the help of the Sunshine Tour. And what a season it's been for him. He's had a second place in Kenya and he won in Qatar. Shane Lowry with the victory over in Abu Dhabi in 2nd place. And we have an American at the top of the Race to Dubai rankings this week. And of course, he is the match play champion, Kevin Kisner.
Yeah, and that's going to be very volatile as we get into the main chunk of the European Tour when it comes back to European shores. Still out and about. We'll be talking about the next event very shortly. Top 10 in the world, please, Ewan.
Well, the Americans are having a good time. They've come again. There's 7 of them in the top 10. And one at 10 is Ricky Fowler, followed by Xander Schauffele and Bryson DeChambeau. Francesco Molinari in 7th place, and the win at Augusta takes Tiger Woods to just outside the top 5. Only 2 points separate the top 5. In 5th place, Justin Thomas. Rory McIlroy, with his consistency, moves up to 4. And ahead of him, Koepka in 3, Rose in 2, and just ahead, by a fraction, is the man we were talking about a few moments ago, Dustin Johnson.
Lovely. Thank you, Ewan. OK, let's concentrate on this week's event on the European Tour. Bit of a break for the boys, but they're back in Morocco. Rabat, Royal Golf, Dar es Salaam. Of course, you've won on, Sam.
I have. It was my last one. I won beating the young fellas that were in the field. It was a mixed event. And I think I needed a 6 at the last to win. I made 7. I went into a playoff against Jacques Alain, and I managed to beat him. Very special, because I'd wanted that trophy my whole career. They give you this beautiful sabre encrusted with diamonds, and I'd always seen this and wanted it. And eventually I got it.
Where is it residing now?
Hidden in the house. It's a beautiful thing, but would you do it? You know,
it's one of those personal things that you wanted to have, Sam, and now it's done and dusted. Absolutely. Along with the other trinkets you've got.
There's a few in there.
I bet there is. Must have a bit of Masters crystal there, have you?
I have. I had 2 eagles.
Which holes?
The second.
Fantastic.
The first time I played, I made a 7 in the first round at the second. The second round, I made a 6. And I made the cut, and I made 2 eagles the last 2 days.
All in the second?
All in the second,
that's
yes.
Unbelievable.
Hold a bunker shot and hold a 10-foot putt. Now, I've still got 4 glasses. You get 2 glasses each. Beautiful glasses with... And so proud of them. It's something that I'll keep forever.
Masters Week, do you get the glasses back out? Just have a little, you know, little slurp perhaps while you're watching it? Crystal,
no.
You know what I mean?
I use bigger glasses.
I'm glad you said that, Sam. I thought you were going to say you drink out the bottle.
What's the course like, Sam?
It's a tough course. It's tree-lined. It's a king's course. We used to go back there and the pins would be in the same place.
Because no one had played it.
Nobody played it for the whole year, but it's a good golf course. It's in great condition, and a good finish, and a tough test.
Back in the day, 7,600 yards, this course was a monster.
It was. It was a beast. And it started in 1971, and you go back to the likes of Peter Townsend, Billy Casper, Lee Trevino, Sam was talking about earlier, the recent winners alongside Sam Harrington and Els, and it made its debut on the European Tour 9 years ago. But it's a very different course to the one that Robert Trent Jones designed, because Crenshaw and Kaur have come in the course of the last 4 years and changed all the bunkerings. I mean, I always thought Robert Trent Jones' bunkers, the ball actually rolled onto them rather than in them. It was like a landscape gardener. It made the course look pretty.
For visuals, yeah.
Yes, but now it's a much tougher test. And you talk about the king back in Sam's days there. Butch Harmon was his coach.
That's right. Butch was a personal coach to the King of Morocco.
He was.
And Butch has got a few stories that go along with that as well.
Yeah, and it wasn't $35 an hour either.
No, I can imagine it wasn't. Actually, in a sort of story-off between Torrance and Harmon, who do you think comes out on top?
Oh, I think we might have to go extra holes.
I think it's extra holes. The amount of stories you've got and the amount that Butch have got, unbelievable.
I can imagine, yeah. My dad and Butch would have had a ball together.
Yes, they would have done. There's a lot of syncopation between the two men, there's no doubt about that. The thing you've got to do well around Dar es Salaam to play well, Ewan, is what?
Well, it is a different test, a completely different test to what it was in the earlier days. But yardage now, you can't really beat the players with yardage, so you have to pinch the fairways in a little. Maybe the greens will be a bit firmer, although the weather in Morocco hasn't been spectacular over the last month or so. It's a good driver's course for the way the greens are designed. You play across one or two of them rather than down them. So I think you need to drive on the correct side of the fairway to have the best angle for your approach shot, whether that be at par fours or fives. It's just a good test, and it's a much better test since Crenshaw and Coore went in there.
A little bit of rust for the players coming back after a break. Most players won't have played at the Masters. They won't have played last week. So in 2 weeks that you've had off, can you lose a bit of your momentum? Is that a long enough period where you can come this week and think, cool, it's almost like I'm January the 1st and I'm starting after Christmas here?
I would certainly hope not, Robert. I'd say a week off is the week where you rejuvenate your batteries and get ready and come out fighting the next week. You've had a week off, have a week off. Don't go home and work, just chill out.
What did you do in your weeks off?
Chilled.
No practice?
God, no.
Really?
No, I hated it. No, I wanted to switch off. And then my dad and I had lots of arguments about that.
He was trying to crack the whip and get
you. He just wanted me to keep working.
Of course.
My father's a great saying when I was young that if you don't take it with you, you won't find it there. Meaning, do your work at home,
yeah.
Go to a tournament and just play golf. Don't go to a tournament and hit balls all day. But of course, the scenario happened where he started to come on tour and let's go and practice. And I was, Dad, what for? Next week? But you told me if I don't bring it with me, I'm not going to find it this week. And I think a lot of practice at tournaments is conscience practice. And it does them no good whatsoever. I think you should relax at tournament, certainly do a little bit, hit a few balls when you come in, but you shouldn't be working on your swing. So go relax, play,
but
have the week off.
But if you wanted to bring it, in what you're saying is correct, if you wanted to bring it with you, but you didn't do any sort of pre-work in the week off to make sure you brought your game to the tournament, how do you marry those two things up?
Well, you're having a week off mid-season. It's not like going into the start of the season where you've done all your work and you're ready, and then maybe you've got a problem, so you phone up your coach, say, I need to do a bit of work this week, I'm going to take the week off and do some work. That's a different scenario. But if you're just taking a week off or there's no event,
sure,
enjoy it.
Eddie Pepperell said a very interesting thing in his interview. He was playing out there in America, and he said, Ewan, that since, I think, 2013, he's never hit balls after his round, never practices after a round of golf where he's playing tournaments. That's unusual.
It is unusual, and the reason for that is maybe he doesn't feel he has to, because he's fairly pleased with the way his game is. Eddie has simplified everything. He's a very clever lad.
Yeah, he is.
You look at some of his ratings and you understand just how clever he is. And what is the point? Monty never did that. Monty never went out and hit balls, you know, after he'd finished.
You, Sam?
No, Sam was the same. He wouldn't go and practice. There was quite a lot, strangely enough, back then who didn't do that. But things were different. There was no ranges. You had to send your caddy down the end of the range to pick the balls up. Sometimes that swung things.
Well, from the caddy end coming forward, that's right.
If you know what I mean.
But yeah.
No, I think you have to do what's right for you. And if you feel that you need rest and that you'll benefit from that rest next week rather than hitting 1,000 golf balls over the course of 5 or 6 days, then that's what you do. And it certainly didn't do Monty any harm.
No, if you'd had your time again, Sam, would you have done anything different?
No, obviously you would. You're stupid things you've done in your life, you try and change. But if you don't do anything stupid,
I don't mean that.
From them.
Yeah, no, I don't mean that. I mean the way you sort of figured out how you enjoyed and how you liked to play the game. If you'd have had your time again, would you have done anything different in your preparation or the way you play golf, what you did at a golf tournament week? Would you have done anything different?
No. I had a ball. I've had a ball. I've done what I wanted my whole life. Played golf and I got paid for it. I love playing golf. That's all I ever did was love to play golf.
Do you still love playing golf?
No. I'm a wee bit off at the moment, but I'm useless. I'm so bad, it's scary, honestly.
Really?
Oh, it's so bad, it's scary, and I just don't want to do it. I've played maybe twice in the last year. I haven't played a tournament in over 2 years. I'm desperate to get back out there.
Oh, you see, that's what I want to hear, really.
I want to find the love again. I want to find the love again. I've lost the love for it a wee bit, but only because I'm so bad.
Is there a way back then?
No, probably not.
No.
Stop playing for money might help.
There is a way back. There's no question about that, because you've just said it in one sentence. There's no way back without the desire.
No.
You actually have the desire. Mm.
Yeah.
You love playing, Ewan. You still love playing.
When my body allows me, yeah. We played at Walton Heath a month or so ago.
We brought that to its knees.
7,467 off the purple tees. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. But some days I'm not physically well enough to play. which annoys me.
But you still love the game?
I still love the game. The putting finished me because I knew I couldn't win. There was a stage I got to with the putting that I knew no matter how well I played.
Yeah.
I remember winning in Zambia. Now, Zambia was quite a tough course, Sam.
Yeah.
Tree-lined course at 68 greens. And I just scraped home. Just. And I had three or four putts to win at the end. And I very nearly took them. Yeah. That's how bad it was.
That's hard, isn't it?
You know, so it's difficult to love that. It's difficult to look forward to that. But I'm like Sam. I have the long one and I use it the way he does, Scott McCarron does, Bernard Langer does. But I feel half the player with that putter.
You still love the game, Sam?
Oh, I still love the game, yeah. But it punishes you.
It does, yeah.
Oh, I used to be able to take it because I knew I could come back. No, I can't come back. I keep getting the same wee chip from just short of the green. And it's the simple chips I don't like. Just chipping, really.
Straightforward chipping.
Just simple chip. And there's too many options of playing. When I get a difficult chip, I'm brilliant.
Right.
I'm still brilliant. I'm a good bunker player. I'll never lose that. But just, and it just drives me mad. I just don't want to go out there and duff these chips. And
Give people who are listening just a quick, because everyone that you play with in pro-ams, mostly amateur players have problems when they go in bunkers. Just give people listening one good bunker tip.
Well, the sand is your friend. You must open the club face up to allow the bounce on the bottom of the club to work. If you have the club face almost square, it just digs into the sand. And you don't cut across a bunker shot. Everyone thinks you cut across a bunker shot. You aim left and your line of your shot is left, but the club face is wide open and that's going to where you want the ball to go. So you're not actually cutting across the shot, you're hitting down the line of where you're aiming, but the club face being open will splash it just that little bit out to the right and it'll come out beautifully soft, run up to the side of the hole, may fall in, Robert, it may not.
God, that was like poetry, wasn't it?
It was. The best advice I could give on bunker shot is get a £5 note, put the ball...
Not off Sam, though.
Well, no, because you'd
have to give it back.
You need it now. A £5 note and put the ball in the middle of the £5 note and take the £5 note out in the bunker. I know that sounds terribly simple.
Yeah.
But if you put the ball in the middle of a fiver, there's an inch or two either side of the ball.
What happens if you take a divot in the fiver? Do you know a good shot that'll accept it?
Sam, I've still got the white fivers. They're much bigger.
Oh, what? They were massive, actually. Very good. You don't want the white fiver?
No.
It's a bit like the argument of how big should your divot be, Ewan?
No, yeah, it's the new one. It's the new £5 note.
Okay, let's talk about the field. Who's playing? Give us an idea who's teeing it up.
Well, it's...
Not your picks. It's too early for your picks. Just give us a feeling of a flavour.
I was ready for them, too.
No.
I wanted to get in before
Well,
Sam,
there's a bit of skullduggery happening at the end with who you fancy. But go on, give us an idea who's playing.
Well, in the top category, you've got the likes of Jos Leitner. I'm thrilled he's back to full fitness again and playing some good golf. Tom Lewis, what a story that's been over the course of the last 9 months or so. Tongchai Jaidi is trying to make his way onto that senior tour, and I've no doubt he'll make plenty of dollars or pounds or euros, whatever it might be. Paul Dunn from the Republic of Ireland. Aaron Rye, another player who's tucked away his first victory. So a lot to choose from. Eduardo Molinari is fighting back as well after injury. So plenty to look forward to. And, of course, there's Chris Wood from the Long Ashen Club down there in Bristol. So a decent field.
Sam, you've been perusing the lists of the players playing and someone from outside last year's top 50. Who are the two that you've gone for?
Now, I'm going to have to be brutally honest here, Mr. Lee. Yes. It's very kind, as I'm guessing, letting me go first. But I can tell all the viewers or listeners that we all picked the same player.
We did.
Now, you are both going to be very fair and let me go first.
Yes.
I'm picking Thomas Dietrich.
Very good.
But our producer almost fainted. We got the three of us come out virtually at the same time saying Thomas Dietrich.
Yep.
So that is my pick, Thomas Dietrich. My second outsider is a young man from Wentworth called Steve Brown, who I think is a fantastic golfer, and his turn is coming.
Right, excellent. So the Dietrich option has gone.
I was never going to pick him anyway. I was just winding Sam up.
Well, we all put our hands up for Thomas Dietrich. So we've given Sam the first pick. He's gone for Thomas, who was in the Sky Studios, by the way, this week. An engaging and charming young bloke, 26 years of age. His time is coming very shortly, and it could be this week. But Ewan, please.
I'm going for Tom Lewis, who is a member of Queenwood, which is quite near to Wentworth. So I'll carry on that theme that Sam was talking about. I think his recovery, when you think he won back, I think it was 2011 down in Portugal, and then the dark years, the clouds, the depths of despair,
yep,
and how he's fought back and played his way into the match play, World Golf Championship this year. An astonishing rise. So I'm going to stick with the rise of Tom Lewis, and I'm going for an old-timer.
Are you?
Ah, yes.
Ah, yes?
Ah, yes. I'm going for Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño.
And you consider him an old-timer, do you? He's probably got 30 years on you.
Yes, he probably has. But he's been out there a long time. He's another one who lost his way. Then he ends up back at the qualifying school. Down goes the confidence. Then you have to rebuild. And I think he is the character to do that. So that's why I'm going for him.
And has always been a top, top ball striker, has Castaño. I'm going to go for his fellow countryman, Jorge Campillo, who's been knocking on the door. At some point, he is, or George, he likes to be known as George. George Campillo, at some point, the winner's going to come along. It's a good golf course if you can manage a game. I think George is going to have a good week. And Christian Bezuidenhout from South Africa would be my outsider. So we've done well in the end. We've managed to trowel out six that then there's no sort of clashing.
Well, apart from we all picked Thomas Treaty, there's no clashing at all.
We did, yeah.
Get your money on Dietrich.
I love Sam with the hook in the side of the mouth there when we came in and we said Dietrich. And we had no intentions of picking Dietrich.
I had every intention of picking Thomas Dietrich. But well picked. It's going to be a great week and it's good for the European Tour to get cracking again, and these young players want to make a name for themselves. There's no place like Morocco to get that done. And maybe they'll join you, Sam, in owning that special, that dagger, the jewel-encrusted dagger.
Sabre.
Is it a sabre?
Well, it's a big dagger, put it that way.
Well, that'll do.
I think it is a dagger.
It'll do for me. Well, that's it for now. Next week, we will review matters in Morocco and also look ahead to the Volvo China Open. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat and Instagram. But for now, from you and Murray, who's gone for?
Tom Lewis and Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño.
See, it's hard there, isn't it? Sometimes you go, oh, who did I go for? Let's try it on Sam. Who are you going for, Sam?
Thomas Dietrich and Stephen Brown.
And Jorge Campillo and Christian Bezuidenhout for me. From me, Robert Lee, Sam Torrance, and Ewan Murray, it's goodbye.